We, the citizens of the city of Billings, for the purpose of establishing a just form of fundamental law, one that is responsible to the public for providing equal and adequate services and protections with efficient use of the community's revenue for all, one that provides for self-governing powers with respect to health, safety, and welfare of every citizen, and one that utilizes the utmost flexibility to plan for the future, do establish this charter for the City of Billings of the State of Montana. The Friday Packet with Stocky and Stout.
Craft itself has always been pretty damn good. Cheap beer, you know.
It's reliable.
Yep.
I'm a big fan. I go through my share of it.
Well, I developed my allergies because I was too fond of Carter's.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, it started just with the Derailed.
Yeah.
Then I just had to quit every other beer. I went all the way down to Michelob Ultra. Couldn't even drink that. How do I turn this one headphone around? Oh, for the love of God.
I think you do need a beer.
That's too bad. That's a tragic system. So do you just break out all red? And?
No, I just get rhinitis. Just get...
Oh.
Can't breathe, can't sleep.
Yeah.
Not really much, you know, blowing my nose or anything. It just swells up.
Yeah, just constricts completely. That's no good.
Oh, it's awful. Mm. John's had allergies his whole life, you know, and I just never thought much of it. Of course, I felt somewhat sorry, but you never know anything until you do it yourself.
Yeah.
Now I realize, holy shit, he's been dealing with this his whole life.
Ah, quit bitching. You're fine. Oh, wait a minute. This is awful. Yeah. This is a very unstructured sort of situation. This is what, our eighth?
Yeah.
Ish.
Eighth-ish, yeah.
We have a few.
What other topics have you had?
Well, the whole idea is we talk about, I don't know, local politics, city council in particular.
Uh-huh.
It's called the Friday Packet.
Oh, okay.
And so, theoretically weekly, sometimes, we go through the city council agenda and the Friday Packet, and we just discuss some stuff and get off on a tangent. We talk
it's like
about
an inside dance. Joke for somebody in my position. I mean, I read that frickin' packet for 15 years. So.
I know.
Back when you had to go over to City Hall and get a printout of it even, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's...
It'd be like...
That's a good point.
They would do the whole thing.
Oh,
just
shit.
Just for council members and a few press people, they'd print out everything there was, you know.
God,
it was just
damn unbelievable. That's crazy. I never even thought about that. I mean, you can just look at, they got the PowerPoints loaded up and everything for you now.
Yeah, you don't have to open, you know, 90% of it you'd never even look at.
So, yeah.
But they used to, just because it's all public information, they'd print out every goddamn page. So it was just huge. You know? 10 council members, 6 staff members, 5 press. I mean, it was thousands and thousands of pages. It was a big part of the clerk's duties, just printing the damn packet. You know?
That's a big piece of the city budget. Well, we, Stocky and I were just, you know, we were wanting to see if we could think of a way to get people more involved. And Stocky decided that a little podcast wouldn't be a bad idea, and see if we could get a couple of people around Billings to listen to it.
Cool.
I don't think anybody in Cleveland's really going to give a shit about it, but... You know, if we can get people interested, and I don't know, we've had a few people say that they find it interesting and learn something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do talk about donuts and professional wrestling a little bit more than we necessarily should, but that's all right.
Uh-huh.
Got to keep it fun, too. If we just read the packet verbatim every week, that's going to just bore the pants off of people. So, but yeah, you know, Stocky's been publishing these for about a month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah, we're right around there.
Give or take.
Yep.
If you just Google Friday Packet, you could find it that way probably.
Yeah, put it in with the Friday Packet with Stocky and Stout. because there's a lot of Friday Packet stuff out on the internet, apparently.
Did not know that.
There's all kinds of things that happen on Friday that include a packet, so we have to make it specific. But, yeah, and it's on iTunes and what, TuneIn and Stitcher?
It's not on quite on Stitcher yet. I haven't gotten that far.
Well,
they're a little particular with all their stuff, but it's a steep learning curve. And I found a friend who knows that, and I've felt really comfortable saying, yes, please help me, because I'm spending just hours and hours and hours just researching, trying to figure it out, because I'm not that, if you get really deep into the web, I'm just lost. Really.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Online Publisher here, I know nothing yet, you know. It's like...
I'll wander around until I stumble into something kind of thing. I think our guest needs no introduction. Honestly.
May as well give him one anyway.
All right.
Are we actually on?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't hear anything.
Oh, do you not hear anything?
I'm just hearing you guys talking.
Can you hear now?
There we go.
All right, there?
There we go.
Is that too loud?
Ooh. Nope, that's about right.
About right there?
I like it.
All right. It's just a little spiel. It's just a synopsis of your entire life.
Cool.
Beginning to end.
Okay.
I don't think you'll miss anything.
Our next guest on the packet has been in the newspaper reporter, editor, and columnist in the great state of Montana since 1980. Aside from a 5-year stint of newspaper work in Minnesota, our next guest has lived in Anaconda, Butte, Missoula, Bozeman, and Billings. In 2011, he published The Big Sky By and By, which is a collection of his journalism over the years, plus several essays and one short story. Currently, he is the proprietor of Last Best News, which is an independent online news site. This week, we welcome Ed Kimmick to the Friday Packet. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having
Appreciate
me.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Stout?
Yeah.
You want to lead?
Sure.
Yeah.
We have some standard questions we ask. We usually lead in with is... do you listen to any podcasts?
Well, it's funny. One of my best friends from Minnesota was a really successful talk radio guy. And then he went into doing kind of a podcast for an alternative newspaper and writing a column. Then he went back to radio. And for the last 5 or 6 years, he's lived on nothing but podcasts. And I don't even listen to his. Sorry, Tom.
Well, don't worry, he doesn't listen to ours either.
No, but it's funny because I have, who was I just talking to the other day? Somebody who just heard about him from me was saying, oh my God, I listen to him all the time. And my friend who works for, you know, some NGO in Mozambique listens to him every day. I'm thinking, wow, Tom's got global reach.
There you go. What's his, do you know his podcast name or his?
Oh God, he's going to hate me. It's just called the Mishki Road Show. His name is Tom Mishki.
Okay.
I think it's just called the Mishki Road Show. I have heard a couple. I just don't ever think of it. And they were fantastic. And I wish I had. But, you know, no. That's the short answer.
It's all right. We're about 50-50 on that one anyway, so you're not bucking any trend. that's cool. I don't know. Stocky and I listen to podcasts pretty much full-time as we work throughout the day. And so it's kind of... second nature to us, but I don't, you know, they're catching on, but they haven't infiltrated the world yet.
To be honest, I'm not much, even despite my background, I'm not much of a media consumer. I don't have a TV. I don't listen to the radio except when I'm in the car, but even when I'm in the car, because I don't really listen to music at home either unless I'm doing something like washing dishes. I can't do two things at once. I've never listened to anything while I'm working or doing anything. I mean, journalism work. Some people at work used to have radios on in the old days before God invented headphones even, you know, and I thought, how can they do that?
Yeah, there's no way. My work is so mindless and easy that, you know, I can just pump it right into my brain, not pay any attention.
I can't even do it at the Y. You know, I read magazines on the treadmill. I can't listen to...
Wow.
I don't know. It's just a strange disability, but...
Might be a superpower.
Years you've lived in Billings. I think we have covered that. Has it been a solid 20 years?
Got almost almost 30 now. I moved here in 1989.
Okay. All right. And the 5 years of newspaper work, what was that? What did that entail in
Minnesota? Oh, that was just working for, it was actually that friend of mine who does podcasts. His dad was just an old school publisher. He had a twice monthly and a monthly newspaper. And my brother was living back there and saw they were looking for an editor. And I was looking to get out of Butte. I was bored there. And another brilliant career move. The honest to God reason I moved back to Minnesota was for outdoor hockey. It had nothing to do with career plans. Oh, I just missed outdoor hockey so bad. That was the main reason. So I went back for 5 years and edited two papers, that came out just three a month, but it was a ton of work, really fun. But after five, we were ready to come back. My wife's from Missoula, and I'd been out here a long time.
Gotcha.
Sometimes we ask the question, why'd you move to Billings, and then why'd you stay after that didn't work out? And I don't know if that applies to you, but...
No, that's a funny question, too, because when I lived in Missoula and Butte, the only reason I ever came to Billings was to play hockey. And so this was the town we'd love to hate. We hated the hockey team, bunch of goons, we just hated the town. We thought it was like a redneck, smelly town with the beets and the oil refineries and the stockyards. We used to just come over here and laugh at Billings. We just hated Billings. It was just hard. But that's a pastime for a lot of Western Montanans, is hating Billings. So when I had the opportunity to come here, we just thought, it's just a way to get back to Montana. And that's why we didn't buy a house. We came here when there was the oil bust, and there was every street had like five houses marked with these big orange stickers. They were that federal program, their repos, mm-hmm. You could get them for like, $20,000-$30,000. I hate to say it now. Yeah. But we weren't going to stick around, so we waited until prices went back to normal and then finally bought one. And anyway, the longer we stayed, the more we loved it. And then it just, as how it's gotten better, particularly the downtown, which we've always lived in or near. So, now we're just... We're kind of Billings snobs. We tell people from Missoula, you guys don't know what you're missing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah.
So you came here hoping it wouldn't work out.
Right. We really didn't.
Disappointed.
I just couldn't have imagined when I moved here more than 5 years. But then I'd never done anything for more than 5 years when I moved here. And so.
There you go.
One of the questions we also ask is tell us something about Billings that we may not know that you would find incredibly interesting, which is not going to be a stretch for you, Iva.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a million little things I know. What did I just learn a couple of weeks ago? I was reminded of something very odd. I was just thinking, I know what it was. When I wrote this story about creation of the Absaroka Beartooth Wilderness, one of the guys I was interviewing, he said he grew up on the south side. He later became an aide to Mike Mansfield and then to Lee Metcalf. And he says, I grew up, and he gave me the coordinates. Was like a block off State and close to 25th. I said, did you live near that boarding house that was the only place that black porters on the railroad were allowed to stay in Billings? And he went, no one's ever known that before.
No kidding.
And it's now that it's still there. It's that kind of rooming house looking place just south of, just east of the skate park and just south of the porn shop.
Oh,
it's a two-story white building.
Oh, really?
And that used to be a boarding house. No, excuse me. That was a place owned by a Chinese guy. So all the Chinese workers in town lived there.
Sure.
And then just kind of in that same general area within about 100 feet, there was another boarding house that all the black railroad employees stayed at because they weren't allowed to use the hotels downtown.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I just learned that from writing a story some years ago about that Wilson Dunham gas station there. It's a Conoco.
Yeah.
Had been in their family like maybe only two generations, maybe three, but the guy just knew everything about that corner of Billings. And so
that's cool.
I learned that fact.
That's awesome. Is it? That's not the Colonial, is it?
No.
That's good.
Although when I wrote, I was just thinking about that too, because I went by the Colonial, I was walking my dog, and that was a really cool thing I wrote years ago. I wrote about the murder that happened across the street, and the Colonial was almost like a character in the story because everything happened there. And after the story came out, County Commissioner Jim Reno called me, and he was kind of sheepish about it, and he says, that was pretty emotional for me reading your story about those kids and the murder and everything. I said, oh, yeah, a lot of people said that. He said, well, for me, because when I was a kid, we were in the Colonial for like 5 years.
No kidding.
We had no money, and his dad was raising him by himself, and they lived in the basement. His dad was like the handyman at the Colonial. So, you know, from the basement of the Colonial to the fourth floor of the county courthouse was a pretty cool story.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, you're talking about that big, pretty gnarly looking house that's like directly south of Ball Books.
Yep. Yeah.
Right there. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
Always a lot of characters hanging out there.
Oh, yeah. There's no shortage.
Yeah. None of them seem to own shirts. I wish they just.
Well, sun's out, guns out, right? You've got to go by that rule.
That's
right?
True. That's true.
Your favorite part of Billings, I guess, would be the next question. It's kind of your go-to.
Well, it's favorite part of Billings is like the draw a circle around my house of about 300 yards because I live on Minnesota Avenue right south of the tracks, and literally 75% of everything I do takes place. You know, I walk my dog, I drink, I eat, I have coffee. I buy stuff. It's just everything I do is right downtown. And
gotcha.
To the point where it's almost ridiculous. I mean, I should get out more, but then you wonder, well, if it's all here.
Yeah, you found your niche. That's
if
fine.
They would just put another grocery store back in the Good Earth.
I was just going to ask, where do you get your groceries now?
Well, I mean, I've always been, Albertsons was always probably getting the majority of my money anyway, just because. As much as I love the Good Earth, for a lot of stuff, I went to Albertsons. But for, you know, all the good food, I now just go to Natural Grocers.
Yeah, yeah.
Lucky's a little bit, but it's funny how many Good Earth refugees I see at both places.
Oh,
you know?
Just working there? Yeah, it's a little depressing. And, you know, they took all the equipment out of that, out of Good Earth, and so now if somebody wanted to do a grocery store in there, they'd have to update everything because it's now a change of use. So now all that equipment's gone. So now they have to update it to current code, which would mean sprinkling the whole thing.
Oh, no.
And doing a few other things, and it would kind of price it out. Hmm. It's kind of a unintended consequence, I think, because it would have been a pretty easy slam dunk.
And I had heard you work downtown. Have you heard the rumor? I hate to say on a podcast and discourages people from coming. We heard a good rumor about, you know, possible tenant for that, a grocery tenant. So,
you know, there have been a couple. Ooh, and rumblings. There might be somebody with the money who can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there have been a couple of good rumors. There's also been a couple of rumors about car lot.
Yeah, right.
Which it was originally.
Yep.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Wasn't that like, was that Archie Cochran?
I think it was. So the whole front was glass, you know, like showroom. And
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can even tell what that kind of thing in the middle looks like, an ancient car lot.
It does, yeah.
Most of our focus on the podcast is about city council and what goes on there and how we can get more young people engaged. And in your years of watching the Billings City Council, what was probably the most contentious thing that you can remember reporting on or just being a part of in your years in Billings?
Oh, I'd say hands down was actually it might be a tie between the Mormon Temple, which blew up about a week after I started covering City Hall, and then, of course, the non-discrimination ordinance, the NDO, about 4 years ago. Both those involve multiple endless hearings, you know, that went on almost all night. In the case of the Mormon Temple, I think one went from 7 to 4 a.m.
Oh, God.
Good night.
And that was at the Alberta Bear. They had it there because there were so many people. And it was...
Really?
There wasn't an empty seat in the place. So 1,400 people attended a city council meeting.
Wow.
Holy shit. I think 1,390 of them wanted to talk, and finally someone said, look, if you have anything new to say, we'd love to hear it. But if you just want to support, you know, this side, raise your hand. It was crazy.
That's insane.
Wow. Yep.
I was at a couple of those NDOs, and, man, that was just torturous.
Yes, it was.
And they should have moved that one to the ABT.
Well, actually, they should have just taken a vote. The hearings was just an excuse not to do anything. That really ticked me off. It's like, well, we don't want to make people angry, so let's just let them all talk for 3 weeks. Then when we finally vote against it, they won't be so mad at us. Yeah.
Let it get it out of their system. Oh, God.
Yeah, let's pretend it's democracy, and they'll maybe they'll go away.
So did you regularly attend the, obviously, the city council meetings? Were you basically what Mike Ferguson is right now?
Yeah, I was an editor for the first 7 years. I was back in Montana, 7 years in Billings. And then my daughter was old enough to start first grade. I wanted to go back to being a reporter because I wanted to be home in the morning when she was not in school, so I wouldn't have to do daycare. My wife worked mornings. I worked till midnight. Didn't see much of each other, but we took care of the kids. So anyway, I asked that summer if I could have the next opening, and right like a month before school starts, City Hall reporter quits. And everybody was laughing, ha, you wanted the job, now you have to cover City Hall. I said, that was actually my first choice. And they couldn't believe it, but to me it's like City Hall. You live in a city that you're covering the main thing. And of course, it was never City Hall. I just took as my beat everything that happened. But the focus was, it all revolved somehow around those Friday packets.
Oh, man. Never a dull moment.
No. So, yeah, I covered City Hall from 1996, as my beat for something like 12 years. And then the editor made me a general assignment reporter, kind of allowing me to do whatever I wanted, so I didn't cover City Hall. And then downsizing occurred, and I covered it for a couple more years before I quit. So I probably went to more meetings than anybody but a couple of administrators and maybe Chuck Tooley, who was mayor for 2.5 terms.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. That's... I feel like I've been to a lot. Yeah. I go to about one a month on average. And that's...
Yeah, and depending on where you are on the agenda, it could be 5 hours, could be half an hour.
Have the meetings always been this long? I mean, was there a time at which they would present a thing and the council would be like, all right, sounds good, we'll go with...
No, it's always been... I mean, like when I started, like I said, the Mormon Temple happened right then. So all of a sudden... 6 hour, 10 hour meetings. And then, you know, two weeks later they'd run through the agenda in half an hour. So it was always a crapshoot. Just depends on what was on there. If you have 4 zone changes that are all opposed by everybody in the neighborhood, guess what? You're there all night long.
Yeah. That makes sense.
But that never bothered me. Those kind of things were legitimate. In fact, I provoked a lot of long meetings myself by I always figured my job was to write the story before the meeting because after the fact, it's too late. So I always did a full lead-in to whatever the big story was. And, otherwise nobody would show up. Yeah. Sometimes I'd kick myself like, oh, my God, these 50 people are here because you wrote that stupid story. Now you got to sit here all night. But I just loved I felt my job was to, like, put the pressure on the council to do something.
Yeah. Get the people
engaged. without just taking the staff recommendation and calling it a night when they had to respond to those people. Mm-hmm. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. You know, that's sort of what me and Stocky trying to do here, and we don't have nearly the education or experience or ability or talent of other people in the room, but we'll see what happens. But I understand that drive to get people engaged and paying attention.
That's
a big deal. So you mentioned downsizing, and I read your article that you wrote about bringing last best news to a close. at least under your tutelage, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. What do you think? What do you think the fate of a real paper newspaper is these days? Do you think it might have a resurgence? Do you think it's just circling the drain?
You mean actually print newspapers?
Yeah,
yeah, they're all gonna go away. I mean, it's amazing that there's even any still doing it. I remember 20, maybe more than 20 years ago, Wayne Shealy, then the editor of the Gazette or the publisher of the Gazette, predicted that there wouldn't be a print Gazette in 10 years. He was obviously a little off, but I mean, he saw it then that why would people continue to buy paper if they don't have to? And out here, it makes a little more sense in Montana just because of we're smaller and there's not the same competition and we don't have the Craigslist competition. You know, the big papers, they got killed like the day Craigslist started. They lost half their advertising.
Sure.
Because all of a sudden they didn't need 18 pages of car ads and 400 pages of job listings, all that stuff that was their bread and butter. I mean, all the big ads looked like that was where the money was coming in, and it was, but probably most of the money was coming in from classified ads. Huh. And they just lost that overnight. So anyway, they're going out. I mean, nobody young reads, you know, people under 30, maybe even under 40, just think it's kind of crazy to chop a tree down to read something. You know, it's yeah. like, what are you, crazy?
Well, yeah, and you can get it all right here on this stupid little computer you got your nose in all the time, and it makes sense. I personally enjoy having a thing to hold and look through and pages to flip. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I would never, if I was looking for a new car, there's no way I'd hit the Gazette first or the Thrifty Nickel first.
You wouldn't even think of it.
And if I needed to sell something, why would I pay $15 to put an ad?
I know, it's kind of amazing that that must be a really small group of people who still think that's the way to reach people.
That's probably sorry. Where the deals are right now.
Yeah,
well,
right.
It's like going on 790 listening to Tradio.
Yeah, they still do Tradio.
They still do Tradio.
God, that's popular as hell. I love listening to that.
Why is that so popular? Is it going to circle back around where people are going to be nostalgic for the classified sections?
And right, right.
Used autos are like,
oh, man. And yeah, the chopping down the tree. And I heard somebody was mentioned to me the other day that there's really one newsprint manufacturer in the United States.
Really? I didn't even know that.
They're having trouble and looking at like going out of business, so we'd have to import it from wherever.
Yeah. Well, that would be the final nail in the coffin.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be.
And Trump will put a 25% tariff on paper, and then we'll never get any paper. You know?
Yeah, it's true. Save your old gazettes.
I'm surprised he hasn't done something to affect, like, tariffs on ink or something. You know, put out the public enemy out of business.
Yeah, that would maybe be a logical step. And just don't say it out loud.
Yeah, I was going to say, erase that.
Yeah.
I heard Trump's a big fan of Friday Packets.
Yeah, he's a regular listener.
He's a huge, huge fan.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah. Very stable listener.
Lord. That sort of sex. I don't know. The state of journalism in your mind moving forward. I know you're getting out with Last Best News, but just the state of journalism in your mind and where you see it going. And for yourself personally, what do you see yourself writing about in the future going forward?
Well, I'm going to keep writing freelance just because I need money. I don't have enough really to live on. But, you know, that's the fun part anyway, just mm-hmm. write more stories that are better. And then I'm already talking to people about, you know, possibly reviving Last Best News, and maybe I'd still be involved somehow. So who knows? I just told them I don't want to do any more daily news. I want to travel around Montana, do fun stuff, or if I'm reporting, it'd be on a, you know, a big long-term project or something. And as far as the state of journalism, it's just, I mean, I'll give Trump credit for that. He has almost single-handedly revived journalism in this country. The Washington Post, I never looked at it 5 years ago. Well, I'll give the Gazette some credit, too. They gave you that free subscription to the Post. They somehow put together that incentive package where if you're a subscriber to the Gazette, you get the Post for free online. So I've been reading that.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So it's been, I read 6-7 Washington Post stories a day, you know, and most of them are about Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a cottage industry, just keeping up with his misstatements and lies and everything else. So I think it's just energized journalists, you know, and it's just another sign that you can't get rid of journalism, because then what do you talk about? You know, I mean, everybody thinks, well, everything I need is on Facebook. Well, where do you think Facebook gets the stuff you're talking about? It's not your friend's opinion you're talking about. It's the, at the base of it is somebody doing reporting on something that someone didn't know yesterday. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, if that doesn't continue, then we're all doomed.
Yeah.
And the only, you know, the only thing everyone's trying to figure out is how to make it pay. And if there's anything human beings have been good at over the years, it's finding out how to make things pay. I mean, they'll figure it out.
Right. Yeah.
Last Best News was just one attempt to do that. And I succeeded in paying myself. As I said in my goodbye column, I never missed a paycheck in 4.5 years. So
I love that.
But the trick is making it, you know, bigger and bring on 3 or 4 people and make mm-hmm. it an actual daily newspaper.
Yeah.
And if I was 10 years younger, I think I could have done that, but I just didn't have the, I was doing what I wanted to do. And I, you know, saving journalism wasn't on my list of shit to get done that week, you know. So.
Well, I think you did your part regardless, honestly. I always wondered what it's like to be a journalist, and you've got, especially in a town like Billings, you know everybody, and you walk down the sidewalk, especially downtown. I'm the same way just because I've been down there for so long. You wave at every single person that goes by. And then you have to go write an article about something, and you know you're going to piss somebody off. And how do you steel yourself against that? Like, you're going to write something that somebody, a lot of people are going to love it. Somebody's going to be super pissed off at you. How do you handle that?
You know, it's just it's definitely an acquired skill. It's just so much a part of what we do that you just learn to live with it. And luckily, most of the people you deal with, those ones who you see every day, because they're in the positions they're in, if they're good, solid public servants, they know what my role is. They know what the role of the newspaper is. And so they don't hold it against you. I mean, they might not be happy with you for a long time, but as long as you're always fair. I mean, I've known reporters who tick people off by, you know, taking a little too much glee maybe in their reporting of malfeasance or whatever. But if you just play it straight and make it clear that you're doing this because it's your job, not because you're trying to ruin their lives, how can they blame you?
That's a good point.
I mean, even the last big scandal I reported on as Last Best News was the police sex scandal. I'm the one who got the original call from an anonymous tipster who tipped me off to what was going on. And I went in and talked to Rich St. John, the police chief, who I've known for as long as he's been there, actually before, back when he was a captain and everything. You know, and I always respected him and got along with him. And he just sat there and answered my question. It was like, God dang it, I wish you hadn't found out about this, but now that you had, here's what happened.
Yeah.
He just manned up and gave me whatever facts he could. I mean, there's some things that were personnel information, but...
Yeah.
And he was clearly angry with me at the fallout, you know, but again, I don't think he... Well, I know he talked to me, you know, a week later on something else, and just doesn't because that yeah. he just knows that's what we do for a living, you know?
Wow. Yeah, that's...
Sometimes it's really hard. I remember years ago when we had an administrator here, and there was just six or seven of his department heads were really, really upset with him. And I think only one of them gave his name because he was just about to quit or just had, and the rest was one of the very few times I ever used or let people just speak anonymously, because really the only thing you have to worry about is if you give people anonymity, you're afraid they might tell you something that isn't true and they're just trying to get at somebody. But since I knew all these guys,
sure,
all these people or some women too, I knew that they were, at least they thought they were telling me the truth and they weren't they were accountable. So anyway, yeah, I gave them, and I remember having to go in and talk to this administrator after, you know, weeks of talking to all these people, and he obviously had heard about it and knew what was going on, was waiting for the shoe to drop. So I made a call to talk to him. I went in there, and I couldn't believe I felt so stupid how nervous I was. And right away he says, I want you to know up front, it's not about you. It's not about me. You're a reporter. I'm the administrator. So I don't give a damn. Let's just talk about what these people are saying. I mean, he just right away just put me at ease by saying he knew I was doing my job. And that's what I mean. Most of those people, and the ones who don't know you're doing your job or they hold it against you, they probably shouldn't be in that line of work. I mean, it's just one indication that they're not good public servants.
That's fair. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So going forward in the podcast, we're trying to get city employees, department heads to come and just talk to us, just, you know, not put a human face, but just, you know, they can hear them. We can, you know, what they're doing in the city. And we're not getting pushback, but they're very apprehensive and they're very guarded. Do you think that's sort of what that kind of stems from? They're just sort of, I don't know, girding up and protecting their job, or are they just really that nervous to talk outside the whole city structure?
I don't know. It's just in my time as a reporter, it's just become harder and harder, federal, state, and local, to get people to talk. I mean, everybody's kind of, I mean, sometimes, depending on who the person is in charge, they can't talk unless they clear it with their boss, you know, with the city administrator, with the governor or whatever, department head. And, you know, it's just the way the world's changing, I guess. I mean, federal bureaucracies are just terrible. They were horrible under the Obama administration. It's not just Trump that's, you know, putting the clamps on people. Most of them did it themselves, because why should they talk to the media? It doesn't help their career. Turned out that there wasn't a lot that you could do.
Right.
If the EPA wouldn't talk to you, so what? What are they? So sue us. We'll see you in court. You know, we got 8 million lawyers, and you got Joe Blow from Montana.
Yeah, because I don't think personally we're just trying to tear them down. We're just wanting to understand and get, you know, more people out there and engaged. I'm not interested in getting you fired or getting, you know, more listeners to the podcast. I want more people involved in the city infrastructure.
Yeah. Right. Right.
It just seems so closed off at a city level, even though there's a ton of people at that level doing a lot of great things, and a lot of people don't know about it. And that's kind of where I'm trying to push the podcast. I don't know if that's more of a question, more of a
I wonder if they'd let you. I mean, you generally find that the lower down the totem pole you go, the more people know. I mean,
yeah,
the bosses have the big picture, but they don't really have the details on any of the good stuff going on. But you talk to an engineer or a park planner or, you know, somebody who signs off on business life. I mean, those people, they're the ones who really know what's going on in the city.
Gotcha.
And if they were allowed to talk, they'd probably be really interesting, you know? Yeah. But,
Well, and that day-to-day stuff is ridiculously interesting. I mean, we've got a buddy who just started with the water department, what, a year and a half ago, give or take? And his day-to-day, he's the lowest man on the totem pole. I love hearing about the shit that he does.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, even he's like, well, I don't really want to come and tell you.
Because it's a good job. I mean, it's a great steady paycheck with awesome benefits. Sure. And that's one of the reasons I feel like they don't want to say anything. They don't want to jeopardize that.
Might make a kind of compelling podcast to hear what it's like.
Well, that was stuff I loved to do too. And I mean, it was always about the process and talking to, you know, I mean, some stuff I hardly invented, but like, just a really fun story was I spent half a shift with a garbage truck that happened to be on the south side. And just all I reported about was what we talked about in the cab of the truck. And then just what they picked up, that was hilarious.
Oh, man.
And then the stuff they talked about finding over the years. I mean, just incredible stuff.
That sounds like fun, actually.
Yeah, that was a really fun thing. I always get off on those kind of process stories. And one time I drove around with Marion Dozier when she was the code enforcement officer, and she just showed me like the biggest messes that she hadn't been able to clean up in the last however many years she'd been at it. And that was just a really fun story. She's giving me the down and dirty details on these just horrible messes that you couldn't get anyone to clean up, save her life.
That's fascinating shit, man. I love it. Yeah, that's great. There were, I read an article about you. I think it was about the me? Article. No. Oh. Come on. We're not talking about this shit. I think it was like the announcement of your book, Big Sky By and By. And said you came out here to live according to what you'd read from A.B. Guthrie, basically.
Well, actually, I didn't come out here for that. But when I moved here, one of the first things that I did was read The Big Sky.
Sure.
And me and this, you know, I was a college student in Missoula, and this other crazy student from New York State and I both just infatuated with that book, and we were going to go live in the lean-to on Clark or in Hellgate Canyon in Missoula. After about two nights of experimentation, we thought, you know, there's something to be said for a bed and a radiator.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty ridiculous.
Do you feel like you've at least honored the spirit of that in your time in Montana?
Of that book?
Yeah.
Hell no. No, I don't even hunt or fish yet. I'm still just way behind the times. I'm still basically a city slicker, you know.
That's all right. That's all right. I grew up in Wyoming. I've never hunted. Whatever.
Never at all.
I've got friends who do it. Mm. They can give me some meat. And
fine. Yeah, and I might still do it, you know. Yeah, sure. Fishing's definitely something I've been meaning to get around to. My brother's pretty fanatical about it, but
sure.
I don't know. Just a lot to do in the world, you know. You make your choices, I guess. And
yeah, absolutely. You still, mm-hmm. I suppose you don't have to check off all those boxes to still have that spirit in you.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I still feel like I did what Boone Caudill did, and that's came out here, not because I was born here, but because this is what drew me, you know.
Sure.
That's always been my line when people say, I'm a fifth generation Montana. I say, well, any fool can be born here, you know. I chose to move here.
Yeah.
No shit. I mean, it's cool to be fifth generation. My wife's probably that, you know. It's a neat thing to be, but.
Well, yeah.
That's I'd rather be an Indian, say my people have been here 20,000 years, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Easy. I'm fifth generation on mom and dad's side to Sheridan, Wyoming.
Huh. Just see, there you go.
Moved to Billings when I turned 19. So there we are.
Yeah.
Take that, family history.
Yeah, I don't think my family's too worried about me.
I don't know anything about my family. I mean, like two generations back, it just disappears.
Really?
I mean, I've never done the research, but that's all we ever picked up on.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy.
So you're big into music, playing the Peach Pickers here in town every so often with your brother, John Kimmick. What is one song that's probably followed you through your life that you still listen to this day and you're like, that's an awesome song and it still resonates with you to this day?
Oh, man, probably going, you know, my first blues heroes were Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, and the version of John Henry that I learned how to play is from those guys. And I actually first listened to that. I went to Bozeman for one quarter of college, and I transferred to Missoula.
It's like 3 weeks.
Yeah. Well, again, I was so damn clueless. I wanted to move to Montana for no reason. Mm-hmm. My brother had taken a freight train out here and said, yeah, it was pretty cool. I said, all right, I'll go to school out there. So it's just so funny nowadays how everybody like starts researching schools when their kids are in like kindergarten. Oh, God. And back when I was in high school, there's a few, you know, really smart people who bound for Harvard or something. The rest of us, or maybe just me, I don't know. None of my friends did either. None of us gave a minute's thought. We just did something and didn't apply for scholarships, didn't do anything. So anyway, I ended up in Bozeman for reasons unknown. I get there during orientation week. I got the longest hair on campus. I wasn't even particularly hippie by any means, but I just had longer hair than anybody else because everybody else was from some farm in Seiko, you know, and I thought it was interesting. Like, wow, this is kind of cool. I got to learn. I got to get me a lasso, too. Everywhere I went, people were lassoing like fire hydrants and sawhorses. It was just like the thing to do on MSU campus in those days.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just learned not even to ask what people were majoring in. You know, veterinary science was the thing, too. And just all these ranch kids. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But then my roommate's from Missoula, and he says, like 2 weeks into the quarter, hey, you want to go back to Missoula? I said, cool, where's that? You know, that's over here. And so we got in his Mach 1 and drove on what was then like mostly two lanes, and it was winter time, but maybe it was later than 2 weeks into the quarter. Anyway, I go to Missoula, and it's not only a bunch of crazy young like liberals and hippies. I knew a bunch of people from high school who had no idea we were going there. I said, why didn't I hear about this? So I went back to Bozeman and just made plans to transfer to Missoula. And so I think it was in Missoula. I went over to the music building, and they just had a record library, and you put on headphones like we're wearing now and just listen to a turntable. And I, two of the albums I found were both like Smithsonian or Library of Congress recordings of Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, and one of Memphis Slim. So I learned that, I learned the Sonny Terry Brownie McGee version of John Henry, and I played that last night, you know, with the Peach Pickers at rehearsal, just because it's my favorite song, just going back forever, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And there's literally like 1,000 verses of that song out there just floating around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've got it down to about 9, but it's just one of the great, great mythological songs in American culture, and mm-hmm. I love it.
That's badass. When do the Peach Pickers play next?
I think we're doing some kind of benefit at the zoo in September.
All right.
But we also have, kind of a rule. Mostly my brother insists that we don't accept any weekend gigs in the summers because Billings, you know, Montana summers are just too short.
Yeah.
And the few times we played like on a Saturday in July or August, we just kicked ourselves like, no, we couldn't go anywhere that weekend. And
yeah, fair enough. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Well,
what do you think?
What's the best joke you've heard lately?
Ooh.
Quick one-liner or whatever you got.
You know, I'm more the person who tells the stupid dumb jokes, so I don't remember hearing any lately.
Well, throw one out. Just give us a
guy says to his doctor, I'm worried about my wife. I think she's going deaf. He says, really? Well, how bad is he? He says, what do you mean? He says, well, how close do you have to get to her before she hears you? He says, well, I've never really thought about it. He says, well, tonight, go home and tell me. So he goes home and he comes in the front door. He says, honey, what's for dinner? Listens, no answer. So he walks to the next door frame. He says, honey, what's for dinner? No answer. So he walks right to the kitchen door. He says, honey, what's for dinner? No answer. So he walks right up behind her and says, honey, what's for dinner? She turns around and she says, for the fourth fucking time.
That's a damn good joke.
Especially if you're my age and you're a deaf old man. And
I love it. That's good. Yeah, I'm putting that one down. I like it.
All right, one closing question. What advice would you give someone who wants to become more involved in the city? What would be that first step for them if they're going out into the big Billings world, if you will?
You mean involved,
you know,
as a spectator, getting involved in elective politics?
Elective politics and being more involved in their community as a whole, rather than, as per se, being, you know, just an own little bubble, if you will.
I guess the easiest solution or, you know, advice just be to find something you believe in and then get involved. I mean, whether it's in a committee or, you know, a nonprofit or like BikeNet, you know, any organization that does something that you want to see advanced, just get involved. I mean, it's a never ending plea from those organizations that they need people. And it's, you know, a lot of gray beards staffing these committees and stuff. And I mean, there's more young people getting involved nowadays, but you know, people have to do that grinding work to get anything done. You can't just, march on May 1st and call it good, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for sure.
I like it.
Awesome. I think we did it.
Yeah. Sounds good. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah. It was painless. Thanks. It was fun.
Painless is what we usually go for.